Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have Brent Gortzen with us today, and he is a therapist working in Northern BC. And generally, his practice is called Thrive with Brent. Right now, we're just having problems thriving in our planet with everything that's going on. So I wanted to get Brent to come and talk to us about how to just be with what we're going through right now. Welcome, Brent.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
It's so good to have you on Health First Radio. Now, you have been a therapist for a long time and watched the process. What process are we going through right now as a collective?
Well, it's really interesting in a time like this, because it's not just an individual thing. It's really what our country and really our whole world is going through. What 20 years of crisis has taught me is that it's really important to just acknowledge what's going on for you.
Mm-hmm. And
what we find typically is our bodies tell us what needs to happen. And so, you know, the first initial stage to an overwhelming crisis is we numb out. Now, one of the significant issues around this is it's kind of an emerging crisis, almost like a car accident in slow motion, and it could be a near miss. And so there's lots of anticipation, and we don't really know how it's going to hit us individually or collectively.
Mm-hmm. And should we have very big expectations of ourselves as we're going through such a big process?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that's one of the first things that I tell the folks that I'm working with and people that I come across. It's something that we hear within our education systems as parents are trying to kind of manage some of their educational requirements, and let's be realistic with our expectations, because at a time like this, many of us are not functioning at our best. Now, interestingly enough, you know, many of those folks who are right engaged in the process, you know, are functioning kind of at the 110%, and I'm always curious or worried about those folks, because at some point, kind of fatigue can kick in.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And really, it's hard to know right now, because there's so much unknown, how to go boldly forth, not knowing what we're going boldly forth for.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, as you and your readers, you know, probably know that follow social media, there's lots of alternative information out there. And, you know, there's lots of discussion around going back to normal. Should we return to normal? And so some of what I believe the more progressive people are utilizing this experiences as an opportunity to recognize, how are we organizing ourselves as a society? How are we looking at the marginalized individuals? You know, much of the rollout as far as economic support and everything else, I mean, that's been, I think, very helpful for many of those folks who qualify. But we've got a significant amount of our population in which, I mean, they don't even fit in those requirements. And of course, there's lots of other folks who, because of their circumstances, don't fit into those programs either.
Mm-hmm. Where everybody needs a little help and a little community along the way through this.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the resilient aspects that we've seen in our community and others, is how people are rallying, supporting one another, you know, gathering groceries for those folks who are on quarantine. You know, I think those of us who have a really decent village, who have a support structure, you know, typically those folks manage quite well because they're well resourced, and you know, it's recognizing, and that's like any crisis. You know, the people who are reasonably well off or you know, at the higher end of the scale typically manage okay, whereas those folks kind of on the lower end, you know, who are struggling are the ones who don't manage as well.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us in our community, what are some ways that, you know, we're sitting there so still? Is there anything that you can see that we could be doing in any way besides just sitting to help our community?
I think that's a really good point, Kathy. I mean, when we look at trauma, when we look at impact, one of the most significant factor is a perception of helplessness. So trauma sticks when people feel helpless. And, you know, I look to all of those things going on around me. And I think this is where social media can play a positive role, where you look at, you know, the COVID car thing going around and celebrating, helping people celebrate birthdays. You know, you see posts around, you know, somebody needing delivery of food because of quarantine, you know, because the grocery stores are backlogged. I mean, there's lots of opportunities. And I guess my encouragement is for people, first of all, to kind of look in their geographical neighborhood. Start to get to know your neighborhood. And I know that's kind of a tough thing to do in this time frame, but you know, you can still get to know people at a distance as they're walking by with their dogs or whatever, and recognize that, you know, giving or connecting starts at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually see in our community that there's so many people. I mean, you're in your tribe, going out for walks, going for bike rides, going for skateboards, and we're seeing people that we never even knew lived here or there or that. And so I guess the big thing is social distance is fine, but we don't have to be afraid of them. Maybe a smile rather than a really wide glare. You know, move around at 6 feet.
Well, and I think that's, yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I, you know, Dr. Bonnie Henry has done a fantastic job kind of focusing on the medical physical aspect. And again, I'm no, you know, epidemiologist, but I mean, I worked in healthcare for almost 17 years. And so I kind of understand kind of that aspect of it. I think what's lacking is the acknowledgement of having an expert talk about the impact on the mental wellness or the mental health at a time like this. And so we had people kind of right on the edge, and then they experienced this, and it kind of pushed them right over. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that's so unfortunate, especially when it made such an impact to their normal routine. And so, you know, they kind of had a patchwork of routines of kind of going for doctor's appointments or physio or yoga or whatever that was. And all of a sudden, you know, those things were taken away. And for those folks who didn't really acknowledge the benefits of those, you know, it was like, well, why do I feel so crappy? Well, mm-hmm. Obviously it's because your routines are impacted and you're suffering a grief reaction to those routines. And I mean, much of my work is really basic stuff when it comes to, you know, the what we call the Maslow hierarchy of needs. And let's just kind of start with the basics. You know, are you getting exercise? Are you being outside? Are you eating well? You know, those kind of things, because it's really difficult to kind of work on the more complex psychological issues if the basic needs and routines aren't being met.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I know it was quite a long time ago, but you were asked to go and help with 9/11. What are some of the same things you see in us, even though we haven't, I mean, we're sitting here and we're looking out at our world and it still looks good. Everything looks normal. I don't even know a sick person, but we're going through this all.
One of the things that 9/11 taught me is don't make assumptions. And so I was the only Canadian who was part of the international team. And, you know, one of the things is, I mean, I didn't have enough tools. So that was one of the issues that I did when I came home. But, you know, I remember talking with a group of young people, and they were indifferent with regards to 9/11. Their issues were that of bullying and poverty and gun violence. I mean, that's what they were experiencing. And so at a time like this, we can't make any assumptions that, you know, people are going through this in the same way. I mean, I've had several clients who are actually doing quite well and who have used this experience as to kind of Marie Kondo their living situation. So they organize their house. They've actually, you know, a few of them have done that within their social circle, kind of recognizing who are healthy friends and who are people that are just way too negative to be around. And they've decided, I'm going to minimize or eliminate contact with those folks. And so we can't make assumptions that everyone's going through this in the same way. The other thing, you know, that I learned from that experience is when you don't have a certain skill or anything else, I mean, there's always time to build it. And what we see after a crisis is people generally, again, back to this helplessness, I don't ever want to go through that situation with not enough tools. That's the time when people, you know, attend courses or they stock up on their supplies a little bit better or, you know, whatever they felt a deficit with, you know, they recognize, I don't want that to happen again. And, you know, that's a really good learning opportunity to go through.
Brent, what were some of the things that you really honed in on after being called to 9/11 for your toolkit?
Well, for me, it was you know, having a real interest in workplace trauma. And so I ended up getting certified from the Justice Institute with regards to a program called Critical Incident Stress Management, or how to manage kind of workplace traumas and crises. The other thing is I also kind of wanted to have credentials to respond anywhere in the world to any crisis without engaging in, there's a term that they call trauma tourism, where, you know, there's do-gooders who kind of fled to the scene of a traumatic event without being connected to a legitimate organization. And so I became certified through the Association of Traumatic Stress Specialists and credentialed so that they, you know, if I was called or if I engaged in an event, you know, my credentials would be acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting how through crisis we learn to grow. It cracks something open, and this is what we need, and this is what we've just got to go do.
Absolutely. And I look back to my practice. Every single one of my significant growth steps comes from a professional crisis or a personal crisis. And, you know, it's, again, that's the opportunity the crisis presents itself. And most people don't necessarily recognize that initially. But you talk to folks after a significant transformation, after a significant event, and many of them would say, you know, I would never wish that on myself again or on anyone else. However, what I did learn is X, Y, Z. And you know, it comes part and parcel with a crisis. If people have the opportunity, you know, once you're out of that dangerous zone, to step back, reflect, and try to find meaning on that experience.
So this isn't the time we unpack it all. This is the time we're just going to go through it, really.
Absolutely. So, you know, for those folks who are just struggling, it's, you know, you keep up with the compartmentalization, you be very cautious with regards to coping strategies, you know, like drugs and alcohol, And it's totally fine to avoid, distract, all of those kind of methods that have served our purposes, that are really good in the short term. You know, it's more once you can kind of have a sense of safety that you kind of say, well, now what? How do I unpack this? How do I, you know, kind of go through? And I use a backpack metaphor for those folks kind of as frontline responders. So how do we go through our backpack and take some of, you know, take some of the pebbles out, take, you know, some of the pieces out so that we don't get overwhelmed in the long term?
All right. We're going to go to a quick break, Brent, and when we come back, we'll talk more about that.